Someone pulls out some teeth.
So I'm gonna go ahead and start because I'm sure I'll run out of time. But thank you all for coming tonight. My name's Gus Becker, and I live in Wenatchee. I'm a wildlife biologist, and currently do contract work, and I do large carnivore wildlife education. So I talk about grizzly bears, black bears, cougars, wolves, wolverines, lynx, and tonight I'll be talking about bears, bear biology. I'm going to talk specifically with a little bit of an emphasis on grizzly bears. I'll talk about bear ID, a little bit about the physiology of grizzly bears and black bears. And if you want to grab any of the information over here on your way out, please grab whatever you want. There's a whole slew of stuff on bears. I'll start out with this short, very short video. These are two sibling grizzly bears in Alaska, and they're play fighting. They're learning how to be learning how to be mean, big old grizzly bears.
So cute.
How big would they be?
So these are Alaskan grizzly bears, which are much bigger. These guys are in the 600 to 800 pounds. I
mean, right there with the 600 pounds?
600 to 800 pounds, yeah.
That's a big animal.
How tall?
You know, 8-9 feet? They're siblings, and they're just playing.
Sounds like my brother and I.
What's that?
It was like my brother and I until he got bigger than me. The game changed.
So the last grizzly bear that was sighted in this area was down in on the shores of Lake Chelan, and that was back in. I have all the records of the bear sightings, and it was seen on the lake about 20 years ago. And then that bear apparently traveled up to Stehekin, and it had two cubs with it. The last known grizzly bear that was actually hunted was killed in 1967. It was the last bear shot up in the North Cascades.
Is that legal?
At that time it was, yeah. So when I started working for this project, it was called the Grizzly Bear Project, but we've now changed our name to Western Wildlife Outreach. We do basically wildlife education. We originally started talking about grizzly bears because as you'll see in the slides, the North Cascades was designated as a grizzly bear recovery zone, and so the reason they needed people to go out and talk about grizzly bears because people were worried, well, you know, the North Cascades is going to be a grizzly bear recovery zone. We better go out and educate the public about what does it mean to have a grizzly bear living in the North Cascades. So, but like I said, we've now moved on. We talk about wolves, we talk about cougars. There's a whole host of large carnivores, and historically, there's been two extremes when we talk about bears: the teddy bear that you get when you're 5 years old and you grow up,
smoky bear,
and then there's the bear that's the man-eating, terrorizes the local town and eats everything. Well, those are two extremes of bear, but neither of them are really true. Are the media, you know, the media always plays out the blood and guts story, so things get sensationalized, and the Bears really have been getting a bad rap, and they always have. One of the things was when the North Cascades Grizzly Bear Recovery Zone was implemented, there started all kinds of rumors generating going around here in Washington that the government was secretly, you know, bringing grizzly bears across the border. And so we had to go out and dispel a lot of the rumors about, you know, the Canadians pushing their grizzly bears down into the U.S. And, you know, Black Hawk helicopters flying in and, you know, bringing grizzly bears in the middle of the night. And you know, unfortunately, there are individuals that really, you know, they talk to their friend of a friend of a friend who said, yeah, I saw a Black Hawk helicopter land and drop off a grizzly bear in the North Cascades. You know, and I've met people that believe this, you know, it's not true. They're not being brought in the dead of night. There are grizzly bears, of course, in Canada, and they cross the border. It's not a large population, I'll show you. But, you know, the grizzlies that come down into the North Cascades, if they're not already here, are coming down from Canada. And all right, let's talk. I'll give you a little context. There are eight different bear species in the world. And of these eight species of bear, six of them are either endangered or in some kind of threatened status. So of these eight species, six are actually threatened or endangered. Those would be the grizzly bear, the sun bear in tropical Asia. So of the six species, the sun bear is threatened and endangered, the grizzly bear, pandas, polar bears are threatened, and I believe the Asiatic bear. The only bears that we have a lot of, the North American black bear, which we have about 25,000 in Washington, and the Andean bear in South America. And then the brown bear or grizzly bear is the second largest land carnivore in North America, next to the largest land carnivore in North America, which is the polar bear. Let's see here. So what was this? Historically, this blue area is the historic range of grizzly bears in the lower 48. You could see they used to be all the way down to Mexico. And there was an estimate of, 50 to 100,000 in this area. And then we started to colonize and move out to the west, slowly, due to many different factors, habitat destruction, hunting, trapping, in the lower 48, we're down to about 1,100 grizzly bears. It's 2% of their former range and 2% of their former numbers. So we've really pushed them out of their traditional habitat in the lower 48. They are quite, they're doing fine in, obviously, in Alaska and this part of Canada. But in the lower 48, we've almost wiped them out. This photo is actually taken around Chelan. I'm not sure exactly where, but you can see some of the things that led to, you know, the demise of the grizzly bear was, you know, fur trapping, habitat destruction, roads. Basically, as we expanded into the west, it used to be we would just, you know, grizzly bear would be shot on sight. They were just so heavily trapped and hunted. As I mentioned, human intrusion, highways, more development. That's basically pushed the grizzly bear higher up into the North Cascades into remote areas. Contrary to this photo, grizzly bears don't like roads. Okay, so one of the big questions I always get is, people are surprised to hear that there might be grizzly bears in the North Cascades because, we all go hiking up here and then. But yes, there are grizzly bears in the North Cascades. The estimated population in the North Cascades is anywhere from 5 to 20 grizzly bears currently in the North Cascades. So a little bit of history. This is basically the North Cascades, and these are all different reported sightings, or somebody saw a track, or maybe they saw a bear scat. And most of these are not verified, but there are 20 confirmed Class 1 verifications. Class 1 means that a wildlife biologist, somebody that knows what a grizzly bear looks like, actually saw it, or they actually identified a grizzly bear track. Those are Class 1 sightings. Of course, there's been a lot of non-confirmed sightings, and if you don't really know what you're looking for, there's a lot of times you're looking at a black bear when you think it's actually a grizzly bear. And I'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later.
That data you had said 1950 to 1991?
Yeah, that's when these all were recorded. So,
are there confirmed beyond that? Do you have a data set?
Good, that's a good question. So these sightings, these 81, is all between this time period. So in 1991, there were no Class 1 sightings, nothing. It was like, where are the grizzly bears? And until 2009, I believe this photo was taken. And I don't know if you read the papers, there was a hiker out, and he took a picture of this bear, and this was on the west side of the kind of North Cascades National Park, took this photo of this bear when he was out hiking in the fall, kept it for like 6 months. He was showing it to some friends, and his friends go, "Wait, that could be a grizzly bear. You should report this." So 6 months later, he reported it. This photo and a couple others circulated among all the bear biologists to, bear experts, and they decided, yes, indeed. So this, in 2009, is the most recent confirmed Class 1 sighting of a grizzly bear, and this is in the North Cascades. It was definitely confirmed, and you can see the unmistakable hump on the grizzly bear there. Pretty exciting. So when you go hiking, take your camera. This is actually a grizzly bear just across the border. They've been doing the last 2 years. They've been setting out what are called hare snags. The Forest Service has gone into remote areas and they'll set up a little barbed wire about this high in a 10 by 10 square, and sometimes they'll put up a camera. Nowadays they have those cameras that take pictures, anything that moves. And this was a grizzly bear in the North Cascades, just over in the Canadian side. Mm-hmm. But they travel long distance, so this bear, even though he was photographed in Canada, he could be coming down into the North Cascades. In Washington State, we have another little corner up here where there are grizzly bears, and this is the Selkirk Recovery Zone. And then we have the North Cascades. So in Washington State, in this period here of about 30 years, about 4,000 grizzly bears hides were taken out of the North Cascades. And these records are from the Hudson Bay Trapping Fur Company. And those guys were, Hudson Bay was a British company, and they were meticulous record keepers, like all British people. Hopefully there's no British people in here. They were anal about keeping records. And so this is very accurate information. So you know, almost 4,000 grizzly bears in that 30-year period. And this is in Washington State. So there were always a large number of grizzly bears here. So a little bit of history. In 1975, the federal government listed the grizzly bear as threatened. In 1983, they formed the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, to a group of scientists to try to figure out what can we do to try to recover or at least get some of the grizzlies back in the lower 48. So what they did is they designated six recovery areas or ecosystems that had what they determined was adequate and sufficient habitat for grizzly bears. And these are the six areas. What they mean when they talk about recovery, it's just protecting the habitat, not building any more roads in there, and protecting any bears that are in these areas. Of course, Yellowstone is probably the most famous. They've got, I think, the most grizzly bears and the most photographed bears. In these areas, and in the North Cascades, the recovery zone, we've actually partnered with Canada. So the North Cascades zone actually goes into Canada, and it is it's an area where the federal government has agreed to protect the bear habitat. And so, looking specifically at the North Cascades recovery area, it's 10,000 square miles. It's the largest of the six areas. It's huge. And if you know this area, I mean, it is 40% wilderness, 90% federal or state land. It's essentially great grizzly bear habitat.
Are those numbers part of what makes it great?
Yeah, because if there's less human disturbance, chances are we'll have a better chance of recovering the bear there. I'm going to move on, talk a little bit about biology and a little bit about bear biology and bear behavior. Grizzly bears are found in high meadows in the high country. This is kind of their typical habitat, open meadows area. They do move around up north and south, up elevation, lower elevation, depending on food. Typical grizzly bear habitat. And what I'm going to talk about here applies to black bears also. They're very, very intelligent, live up to 20 to 30 years, breed in May and July, and then they'll go into their dens in October and November, and they won't come out until March or April. Now, the bears go in and they go to sleep and they hibernate. And so from October, November to March or April, what is that? October?
5-6 months.
They don't defecate. They don't urinate. Their heart rate drops to some incredible, like 12 beats a minute. It's incredible if you think about the physiology of a mammal that goes to sleep and is able to reprocess its urine and its feces. And the physiology is amazing. And if the implications, if we were ever to figure out how bears do that, it's got implications for space travel, people that, you know, diabetes, urinalysis, all that stuff, dialysis. It's amazing the physiology that that the bears have. And of course, you know, when they go into their dens in October, November, we can relax and we can go about our daily business because there's no bears out, and we don't have to worry about the grizzlies coming after us. But they are intelligent, and they may find out that there are people out in the wintertime, and Who knows? Maybe they'll decide not to. Okay. So the bears have an incredible sense of smell. Both black bears and grizzly bears, their nose is about 9 times more sensitive than the most sensitive hound dog. They can smell.
Wow.
Yeah, they can smell apples sitting on someone's deck from a mile away. They have an incredible sense of smell, which actually leads them into a lot of trouble. They're very fast. They can run up to 35 miles an hour. You don't want to outrun. You can't outrun a bear, obviously. And you've probably heard the joke about the two guys that are, you know, backpacking up outside a Holden, and they met a ranger coming down the trail as they were going up, and the ranger told them, "Be careful." They, you know, he saw a bear up the trail, and you know, to be careful. And so the ranger went on his way, and the two guys that were hiking, one of them got out and reached into his pack and took his hiking boots off and put on his tennis shoes. And his partner was, you know, "What are you doing putting on your tennis shoes? I mean, you know, we still got, you know, 5 or 6 miles to get up to Holden Lake or whatever." And he goes, "You know, aren't you worried about the bear?" And he said, "Well, no, I'm putting on my running shoes, so I can just, as long as I can run faster than you, I don't have to worry about the bear." I'm not very good at telling jokes. One of the reasons grizzly bears are so fragile is they have a very long reproductive cycle, females aren't reproductive or will not have young until 5 or 6 years before they're ready to breed. And you can see over here is the comparison with black bears. They normally have 2 cubs. This is really interesting. The cubs will stay with the female, with the mother, for 2.5 to 3.5 years. And in that period, the female bear will not breed, won't go into heat. As long as she has cubs, she's not going to reproduce or mate. An adult will only mate about every 3 years. In a 30-year lifespan, they'll probably give birth to about 10 cubs. But about 50% of those will die. Grizzly bear that can live to 30 years will have at the most, we estimate, 5 cubs that'll live. And the cubs will die of malnutrition. They could drown. They could be injured. There's disease. It's a tough world. I mean, it's a tough world out there for bear cub, both black bear and grizzly bear cubs. One interesting thing about the bears is when they're born, they weigh about a pound. They're about the size of a squirrel. And then they're born in the den. They feed on nothing but mother's milk, which is very high in protein and fat. And by the time they're 1 year old, they weigh about 80 times more than when they were born, which, if you were a human, would be the equivalent of being like an 800-pound 1-year-old human. The mother bear teaches the cubs everything. The male bear has nothing to do with reproduction. All the male does is mate, and then he goes about his merry way. And the mother is left to teach the cubs everything they know. These are typical home ranges. Females have a little bit smaller home range, and of course it varies by your food source. If you're up in Alaska and the bears live next to a salmon stream, they're not going to have to travel very far for food, so they're going to have a very small home range. A little bit of some of the differences between black bears and grizzly bears. Black bears are more of a deep, heavy forest animal. Their claws are about 1 to 2 inches long. Black bears are great tree climbers because of the small claws. A grizzly bear has a typical claw of 2 to 4 inches, which is about as long as your finger. Those are big claws, and they're They're used for digging and turning, you know, ripping up bark. What do they eat? Surprisingly, they're not these huge meat eaters. They're 90% of their diet is vegetable matter. And of course, this is all easy to tell you. All you have to do is, you know, pick up some bear scat and study it. But so these, you know, this is typical. You know, only about 10% of a bear's diet is animal parts. And they subsist on grass, shrubs, forbs, which are non-grass plants like horsetails. Some of the bear, typical bear food, and I'm sure everybody recognizes some of these: devil's club, mountain ash, western white pine. In the springtime, you know, they love horsetail grasses. They, of course, they do eat meat. So right now, for example, right now there's the high hunt just opened up and up here. So the high hunt is up way up there and around Holden Lake and Lyman Lake, all those big lakes up there. It's the high hunt going on. The hunters, when they go up there, if they get a deer or an elk, they'll debone their carcass and haul out just the meat, and then they'll leave this. I suspect that there's a lot of black bears and grizzly bears that are eating hunted deer and elk. You know, they love to rip up logs with their big claws. They eat plant roots, hornets, insects. Now, there is this in the Rockies. There's an interesting, they eat these things called army cutworm moths. So these moths, and they're about this big, in the summer, in the heat of the summer, they'll go up to these talus slopes and they'll go underneath the rocks and they estivate or they rest. In the heat of the day, they're sleeping underneath these big rocks. And you can find grizzly bears in these talus slopes ripping up the rocks. And they're eating these moths, and they'll spend all day there, and they'll eat thousands of these. And so what's really incredible to me is that there's a 600 or 800 pound bear that's eating a moth that's this big. And it just kind of symbolizes that whole connection. You never know what is dependent on what to live, and even though, you know, we've done lots of studies in the world, I think there's still a lot we don't know about. If you take away the moth, you know, if herbicides or insecticides kill an insect, how in that web of that cycle is it going to affect a bear? I mean, who would have ever thought? Grizzly bears can eat thousands of these in a day, and they're these moths are about something like 70% carbohydrates and 20% protein. They're an incredible source of food. Of course, right now, especially around here, the bears are eating. They're looking for berries, and I think someone actually saw. Who saw the bear? Yeah, you saw the bear. So. Last year, the same bear, I think it might be the same bear, there's a little spot like 5 minutes on the trail out to the falls where there's a clearing full of berries, all kinds of berries. And last year I went and watched the bear for about 15 minutes. I sat down and watched him eat. And what they do is they take their claws on a big bushel of berries and just kind of shovel them in because their claws are acting like a... grater or whatever, and they just sit there and they grab the branches and they pull these berries into their mouth. Anyway, if you want to go out 5 minutes out there, be quiet, and you might see the bear, the old black bear. This bear's eating too many berries. Way too many berries, and he got the berry runs. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about, because part of my my I go to towns like Leavenworth and talk to people about how to live among bears, because there are people that live in the mountains that don't realize that, you know, there are bears out there. And part of my job is to try to educate people on how we can live and get along with the bears. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, we'll see bears in the field, or they may come by our house, and they're not interested. They're just kind of passing through. What happens is when we do things like leave our trash out, or we leave our bird feeders out, that's when we start having problems with bears. And one of the best bear stories I heard was from here in Holden about they used to keep, somebody that's been here could probably tell us, they used to keep their trash in a bus.
Yeah,
can you tell the story?
Yeah, the bear got into the bus because somebody left the door open, and they thought, well, we'll leave him there, let him come out, and came back and closed the door. Didn't see that the bear was still in there, so the bear busted all the windows out.
He spent the night in the bus eating.
Spent the night in the bus, ripped trash everywhere.
Yeah,
it's gotten in the kitchen too.
Yeah.
So you know, in communities like, for example, Lake Tahoe and Whistler, you know, there's a lot of vacation homes. People leave their trash out. They go to Whistler for the weekend. They have their second home, and then when they leave on Sunday, they put the trash out. It sits there for 3 days, and the bear.
My country in Colorado, you can't put your trash out until after 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, because it's a problem if you're in bear in bear country. These are just pictures of. These are actually just pictures of. This is actually a food container, a bear proof fruit food container. And these are just pictures of the bear trying to get out. part of the work I do is you know, trying to get people to use bear containers. I won't spend a lot of time on this here. Just know that you know bears are great animals. It's just when they come across humans that don't take care of the trash that's when we have problems with bears. These are a whole list of common bear attractants. Bird seed is a real common one. This is a bird feeder, and this is just how agile look at this blackbird. It goes up the little
squirrel,
hangs by his nails, and gets to the bird seed. The black bears are incredible. They're incredible climbers.
That's amazing.
If you're a rancher, you're always concerned about large predators. But the truth is, grizzly bears really are not interested in cattle or sheep. Occasionally, they've been known to take a cow or sheep, but it's fairly rare.
So the compensation, does the government compensate a rancher?
They used to. I don't know if they do now. They might in certain areas, like around Yellowstone. They might. If there's bear problems, they may. I'm not sure if they still do. One thing that's really effective is if you have a compost pile or anything, is an electric fence. If you set these things are really expensive, but if you have a wire about nose height, and the bear touches that wire with his nose, he gets a shock. That's a good reason not to come back. In general, I try to educate people, you know, that live out in the woods, is, you know, keep the trash away from your bear, because if a bear becomes conditioned to getting into your trash, there's only two things that are going to happen. Either you're going to have a bad encounter with it, or the bear's going to have to be relocated, or in worst case, euthanized by the state. As far as, you know, if you're a backpacker and a hiker, you know, traveling in groups, and if I go out by myself, I'm always, if I get into a thick forest, I'm always singing a song or whistling or something, because you don't want to surprise a bear, and I'll talk a little bit about what to do if you actually come across a bear. Again, if you're in bear country, you need to keep a clean camp. Hang your food. Carry a bear-resistant container. There's some campgrounds I know where they give you these containers, like around Yellowstone. So bear encounters are pretty rare, and just using common sense, you can avoid a negative encounter with a bear.
That's
of course, you know, obviously, I think everybody around here knows you don't walk up to a bear like this and take pictures of it. For us around here, there's four reasons that you may have an encounter with a bear that's not a pleasant one. If you surprise a bear, you come across a mother with cubs. If there's a bear on food, meaning someone's trash, or on an old deer carcass, and human condition bears that are, you know, the ones that are coming into town day after day. And there's simple things you can do. You know, surprising a bear is probably and a bear with cubs. You know, if you're out hiking, if you're loud and you're talking, the bear's going to avoid you. He's going to hear you coming and he's going to move away. He or she's going to move away. I always look around and see, you know, maybe there, you know, if there's fresh bear scat around, then I'm going to start thinking about maybe changing my plans and turning around. But 9 times out of 10, if you're loud and the bear knows you're coming, if he can hear you or smell you, he's going to move out of the way. So what do you do if you actually come across a bear? Well, if the bear's, you know, like this guy, and he's just looking at you, he's not interested in you, then you need to be
bigger.
You know, make yourself big, stand up on a rock, don't do anything threatening, don't step toward the bear, because as long as the bear doesn't perceive you as a threat, he's going to leave you alone. In the rare case that a bear actually charges you, you want to fall down, play dead, cover your neck, because again, he's probably just going to come up, take a sniff at you. Once he realizes you're not a threat, the bear 9 times out of 10 will walk away and leave you alone. I've seen quite a few bears out on the trail, and I've never had to do that. Most of the time, the bear just wanders on and rarely even gives me a glance. To put it in perspective, as far as grizzly bears are concerned, there's been 18 fatalities in the last 100 years, and you know, more people are actually killed by domestic dogs every year. And then there's a lot of other things that you should worry about before you start worrying about having a grizzly bear or a black bear encounter. Let's talk a little bit about grizzly bear ID. This is a bear trail. They're creatures of habit. They'll use trails over and over again. If you're hiking and you come across something like this, you know, maybe a bear's been digging in a log. This is a really good one. If you ever come across overturned rocks,
big rocks,
there's a bear that had flipped that over 9 times out of 10. This would definitely make me think twice about going forward. I might turn around. This is your typical bear dig. You know, they're flipping over rocks and going after roots. Day beds, those are kind of hard to confuse. You could confuse that with an elk bed or a deer bed. Obviously bear scat and ripped off bark, those are other bear signs. As far as physical differences here in Washington State, you know, grizzly bears in Washington State aren't going to be giants like they are up in Alaska. What about visually? These are typical These are typical bears. This is your typical black bear. Big ears, long Roman pointed nose. Grizzly bear has a flatter face, really stubby little ears, and a shorter kind of stubby nose. Now, color is not an indication because a grizzly bear can be black, a black bear can be brown. So a lot of times I have people come up to me and go, oh, I saw a grizzly bear, it was, you know, brown, and it could be he saw a black bear that was just brown. Your most likely chance of identifying a grizzly bear would be from the track. And the big thing to look for is grizzly bears have these huge claws, so the separation between the toes and the claws is going to be 2 to 4 inches. And there's a more scientific way to tell, too, is the grizzly bear has kind of a flat line here, whereas the black bear has a rounded toes. And this is the scientific way. If you come across a big track, you draw a line from the big bottom of the big toe to the top of the pad, extend the line out, and if the little toe is 50% or more above that line, it'll be a grizzly bear track. And if you ever come across a grizzly bear track, you think it's a grizzly bear, take a picture. Do whatever you can, you'll be famous.
At least on the
you'll get your name in the news. All right, so here's the test. Is this a black bear or a grizzly bear?
Black bear.
Yeah, black bear. Big.
Oh, no. Big ears.
Look at those ears and look at that nose. Black bear or grizzly?
Grizzly.
Yeah, obvious hump. And the hump, by the way, is the grizzly bear head is huge and it weighs a lot, and so there's these giant, big tendons that go to the base of the neck for holding that head up. Okay, grizzly bear or black bear?
Black bear.
Yeah, big ears, big giveaway. This one's harder.
Long nose, black bear.
Yeah, black bear, long, big, long nose. How about that one? I think that's a black bear. You got to be careful with the hump because on uneven terrain, a black bear could be, you know, with one leg up here and it looks like he's got a hump. So the hump is kind of tough. That is a... that's like a year-old grizzly bear. Grizzly. Black bear, typical black bear. This is a weird picture, but... That's a grizzly bear. Obvious hump. And that is...
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. Okay, well, that's all I have because I guess Vespers is in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's all I have. I'll take any questions you have, and I kind of ran through that kind of quick. Yeah.
So that's an acceptable practice, just to leave whatever part of the carcass you will want to carry home when you're hunting?
In the high hunt, yeah. In the high hunt, those guys have to walk out.
Yeah.
And they will debone the carcass, and all that, the hide and the bones are left up there. And they'll do one or two, well, it depends on what they get, one or two trips out to haul out the meat, just the meat.
It is unacceptable to just take a rack and leave the carcass. You have to take the meat.
I'm going to go out and see if that bear is there tomorrow.
Well, I went up above the creek in the falls, and there was rocks turned over.
Oh.
And they were quite large, and I thought it was strange that right in the middle of the trail they were, yeah, were turned over.
Yeah.
Earlier this summer, I heard a bear walking the high real Demo Creek trail on the switch.
Is it true that a male bear will kill the cubs?
Well, you know, I've heard that, and I think it is true because the male, I mean, he wants to reproduce, and if the female has a cub, she's not going to go into heat as long as she has that cub. So that's why the mother bear is so protective around other male bears. Just, I mean, you've seen probably on the Nature Channels, yeah, you know, when the mother bear senses she's with two cubs and she senses or sees a male, maybe she hightails it out of there. Because, yeah, the male will try to hurt the cubs, kill them. So the female will go into heat and then you can mate with her. Yeah?
How far away can wolves smell?
You know, I think they're like a dog. They are dog smell. Well, you're not going to be here, unfortunately. I'm talking about wolves in a couple of days, and you know, wolves are interesting. They have a dog smell, but they're very intelligent, and they know they have routines where they go to look for animals, and you'll be amazed at the relationship between wolves and ravens, because ravens are scavengers. The ravens will fly around, see a herd of deer or elk, go to a wolf pack, and sit on the tree and
caw, caw, caw,
and tell them. Then the wolves will go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The ravens are incredible animals, and they have a relationship with the wolves. And I'll tell you a quick my raven story. So I was cross-country skiing at White Pass. I was cross-country skiing, and I came to a clearing with a snow slope. You know, it was all snow, about 3 feet deep. And I stopped, and there were three or four ravens playing, you know, kind of at the bottom of the slope. And I stopped, and I was watching the ravens. Pretty soon, one raven flies up to this slope, which is about 30 or 40 meters long, flies to the top of the slope, gets to the top of the slope, and he's, ha, ha, ha! And he rolls somersaults down the slope to the bottom, and gets down to the bottom, he's like, ha, ha, ha! Then another one flies up to the top of the snow slope, and he gets up there, and he's like, ha, ha, ha! And he tumbles head first. They were playing on that snow slope, taking turns, like tumbling around. So the ravens talk to the wolves. It's an amazing relationship. Yeah. All right. Well, I gotta get out of here. So I'm talking about cougars on Wednesday. Thanks a lot.